Welcome back to My Seminary Life. I'm your host, Brandon Knight, and today we are off to our next stop in Bundyville. For those of you joining the show for the very first time, I'm doing a little round trip to a place called Bundyville. It's a place out west of me, unless you live like in the Utah, Nevada area, then you can just kind of pinpoint it for yourself where in the world, where, what direction you are headed in right now. But after listening to the NPR series Extremely American, one of the recommended shows to go check out was this limited series called Bundyville. And I tuned in, really enjoyed it, and now doing a little roundup, diving into some of the more religious subjects that come up in this series. They all kind of have one thing, at least the first two stops have something very in common, and that is cults. We're talking about cults, new religious movements, very offshoot ways of thinking that is, in a way, niche, but is also becoming so much, especially in today's conversation, becoming so much more pervasive that it is very important that we understand what is being said, what is being believed, and how do we build the kingdom of God in a way that shines a light on these anti-gospels that are coming out. I do have a little bit of housekeeping to attend to, because there should be an episode in between this episode and the first stop on the Bundyville trip. So after the first Bundyville episode, I did a rebroadcast. In that first episode, I don't want to go too far into it. If you haven't listened to it, please go. If you haven't listened to it, please go check it out. But in that first episode, one of the topics that gets brought up is Mormonism, and talk a little bit about the history of the Mormon Church. There should have been an episode that came out that was a rebroadcast of my... I previously had done an episode going into the history and basic beliefs of the Mormon Church. I rebroadcast that episode just as a way to refresh everyone's memory, kind of give a little bit more context to that first stop of Bundyville. But for some reason, that episode did not upload on any of the major platforms. And if you're a regular listener, you're probably looking at, especially if you're using Spotify or Apple Podcasts, you're probably looking at your phone like, oh yeah, I did not listen to that. I don't remember that being there. It never populated on those sites for some reason. If you go to the official My Seminary Life Captivate page, it's right there. You can go listen to it there. I've tried troubleshooting it different ways. I was never contacted with any kind of some kind of violation of community guidelines. I was never contacted about that. It's not like other podcasts haven't dove into Mormonism before. And the title is just LDS Rebroadcast. So I don't know why. I don't know why that episode didn't populate. Hopefully this one does. And as far as I know, no other Anazao shows has had difficulty populating their episodes. So I'm hopefully using that word correctly, because I've used it a couple times now. But and Joshua Knoll, you're probably listening to this. You've been very busy, and you're like the head person here at the pod, at the network, but you've had a lot of personal things going on. So when you get to this point in the episode, feel free to text me and we can maybe try and figure this out and hopefully get it up. I just haven't wanted to bother you with this because I know you've had a lot going on, brother. So yeah, so there is an episode. There should have been a little, I called it a detour episode, in between the first stop of Bundyville and now here on our second stop. And hopefully that gets remedied. Otherwise, you'll have to go to Captivate, myseminarylife.com. What is it? You'll have to search My Seminary Life Captivate and it'll come up. The web address is a little funky, so you'll just have to go that way, but hopefully we'll be able to remedy this. All right, so next stop, Bundyville. So here we go. So we're headed back, for me, out west. We're headed towards the, like, I mean, really, it is the west, because the Bundys live, again, no relation to Ted. The Bundys live kind of like this Nevada, Utah, Arizona area, but this episode and the next episode, hopefully they all show up on your podcast platforms, but this episode and the next episode that dives into season two, some topics that come up in season two, this is going to expand to basically include all of the American West, Iowa, Washington. Like, we're basically getting the entire corner there of Western United States. No California, but the rest of that is gonna be it starts to get covered here in season two. So wherever you're located listening to this episode, you now know what direction we're headed in. So season one really focuses of Bundyville, really focuses on the Bundys and this incident they had of not paying their grazing fee taxes, and it turns into this whole standoff with the government. We're like almost brushing up against Waco's situation again. And it actually all works out really well for them. It all really works out well for the Bundys. Season two is an interesting, like, spinoff. It's called The Remnant. And it's a very appropriate title for the second season of this podcast series, because the Bundys themselves are barely mentioned. It's really about those who followed in the aftermath, and how this situation and one very specific person who's not even related to the Bundys is causing like a new wave of alt-right skepticism towards the government, and dangerous theology. There's a name you need to know, and that name is Lavoie Finicum. I, again, truly recommend that you go listen to this whole series. You can find a link for it in the description of this episode. And again, Leah Satilli, if this series roundup ends up somehow in your earbuds, open invite. Come hang out with me. I'd love to talk more about it. You can provide more context, set the record straight if I'm, you know, misrepresenting somehow. By all means, please. It's a great show. Go check it out. Overall, when it came to this standoff with the government over the grazing fees, it was very touch and go at times, but rather than with Waco, where, you know, the whole place got burnt down and people are dead, by way of casualties, this situation was far, far better, except for one guy, Lavoie Finicum. And what's interesting about the situation surrounding Lavoie Finicum is that, to oversimplify and summarize, again, go listen to the whole series. Lavoie was basically this, like, didn't really have a direction with his life, and then got really sold out to the Bundys to kind of, like, fill that void in a way. But it wasn't a... His death wasn't necessarily a direct encounter with the Bundy ranch, but rather a traffic stop that went haywire. It was him and several other of the, like, supporters, and it turned into this shootout, and he gets shot. Again, I am fully oversimplifying things. Go listen to the show truly to get the full details. But he's the one casualty in this standoff between Bundy Ranch and the U.S. government. And naturally, as a result, though everything works out very well for the Bundys in the end, Lavoie becomes the martyr. He becomes the martyr story. And after the Bundy Ranch situation, people take the story of Lavoie Finicum and use it as a warning sign, a red flag, a story to tell to churches, because that's the word they're calling themselves, to churches to unite a group of like-minded followers. Look what the government did to Lavoie Finicum. Look what they did. They're the ones stepping on our rights, and they killed somebody over it. Now, here's the difficult part for me. I'm going to put some of my cards on the table, not all of them, but some of the cards on the table here. Of more and more, I'm becoming more and more one of those people who just does not trust the government any way, shape, or form, no matter who's in charge, no matter who it is. I don't trust them. And as right now, the current group of people in charge of things, I really don't like, and I really don't trust them. Okay. But it just more and more my like political, ethical, philosophical, theological leanings are just like, I don't trust or believe in any political anything. And so even for me, though I don't agree with the direction or at times the theology that these alt-right militia groups or even like the Branch Davidians at Waco, what conclusions they arrive to, though I may not agree with those, the setup part, honestly, folks, I don't blame them. I kind of get it. Like, the Lavoie Finicum situation is a little bit like, I was going about ready to say something that was a little distasteful. With the Lavoie Finicum death, he was like, I'll just say what he says. So in the audio from the traffic stop, when he takes off on foot, he just keeps yelling, "You're going to have to kill me. You're going to have to kill me." That's like the only way that he is going to stop trying to evade them is, "You're going to have to shoot me." And they do. So in a way, I feel like the Lavoie Finicum situation could have been avoided if he just would have. But that, you know, those kind of terms put me into a different camp altogether. But the point I'm trying to get at here is, though I may not necessarily agree with the conclusions that are drawn from a lot of these alt-right groups or people like the Branch Davidians at Waco back in 93, I don't blame them. I don't blame them in a way. A lot of them, especially with Waco, I'm showing where eventually we're going to be headed this year on my seminary life. Especially with Waco, there's a lot of people who are victims. There's a lot of people who are victims in that situation. The Bundy Ranch situation is different, I think, at least from what I have learned, especially from this series, that this is really more so a group of people trying to look for a fight, if I'm being honest. And that's a lot of what happens with these alt-right militia groups, is that they're really more so looking for a fight than they are trying to defend, which is different. But the skepticism towards the government and the idea that they are going to overreach their powers for their purposes at the expense of the people that they're supposed to be representing. Honestly, yeah, I agree with that. I do agree with that. And it's not just I don't like Donald Trump situation, although I don't. I just think that's just the nature of the government, is that it they have, the government has so much power that it can overreach. And at times that overreach has caused a lot of damage. Thankfully, with Bundy Ranch, there is one casualty, as opposed to Waco. But yeah, I kind of get it. Anyway, trying to get back on track with our stop here. So the story of Lavoie Finicum is now being told at presentations at a group of churches. These churches are churches in name only, first off. And second, they are loosely or very little, they have either they're loosely affiliated or they have very little to do with each other. They're more independent. We're more independent. But the story of Lavoie Finicum was being used and is presumably still being used, because this isn't like that far back of an encounter that happened. I think we're talking again like 2010s, sometime in the 2010s, if I remember correctly. This story is being used to unite these individual churches to be more of a united front. These churches are part of the Christian Identity Movement. If you've never heard of the Christian Identity Movement, and note, I am calling it movement, not denomination. I refuse to call these people a denomination. This is a cult. This is a new religious movement. But if you've never heard of the Christian Identity Movement, no, this has nothing to do with finding your identity in Jesus. This is Aryan churches. This is the unofficial official church of the Ku Klux Klan. Now, the series does spend a little bit of time on the belief systems and theology of the, I should really just call it belief systems, of the Christian Identity Movement, but kind of had to outsource my research a little bit here. And in a way, I'm glad that I finally got a chance to understand Racist Theology 101, because there has been this part of me over the years that I'm like, how can somebody call themselves a Christian and justify very obviously racist thinking? How can somebody do that? I get, in a way, though I don't agree with it, I get where the eisegesis comes from with like slave theology, you know, when back in like the Civil War, pre-Civil War era in the South, especially when passages in scripture that do talk about slavery are being weaponized to enforce slavery and lay an even heavier burden on slaves in the United States. Like, I don't agree with it, obviously, but I get how we got there. The more racist, the other kinds of racist thoughts that come from certain people and actions and speakings that come from other people who claim to be Christians, I've always been like, so how do you make that work? So here we go. This is how you make it work. And the answer is very, very poorly. Basically, just disregard the Bible, and then you can make it work. So this finds its roots in a theological movement that was going on in England during the late 1800s, like 1860s, 1880s. And I find that part to be very interesting because, as I have noted several times here on the show, as I've been doing these more cult-related episodes, there is, the 1960s was a breeding ground for cults and new religious movements. And it also seems like the late 1800s, of all places, also seems to be a time period with a lot of interesting new religious movements and thoughts going into place. But there's one that's taking place in England during the late 1800s that the core focus of their religion, this like theological movement, is that the 12 tribes of Israel, are not the people in Israel at that time, but rather are the Anglo-Saxon, I need to stop and get some more water. The Anglo-Saxon countries in Europe at that time. The true 12 tribes of Israel are white people in Europe. Western Europe specifically. Oddly enough, this is not the only time that people have made outlandish claims about who really is Israel at this point in history. In that LDS episode that you didn't get to listen to, but is also still out there somewhere for you to listen to, I do talk about how there is this idea that some of the Jewish people are like the Native Americans, and that doesn't add up biologically whatsoever. There's also another theological movement that claimed that the true 12 tribes of Israel are located in the nations of Africa. Like, there's different people groups, different countries in Africa that are the actual true 12 tribes of Israel. Like, this is a very interesting topic that keeps coming back up to basically distance the Jews from their rightful theological place within Jewish and Christian history. Now, that already cooked theology. That's right. I talk like the young kids. That already cooked theology takes a hop, skip, and a jump across the pond to the U.S., where we make it worse, because that's one thing we're really good at, is taking something and making it worse. And rather than the Anglo-Saxons being the true 12 tribes of Israel, instead, Anglo-Saxons are just the true people of God, period, and the Jews are actually the children of Satan. It is literal straight up demonization of Israel, of Jewish people specifically. So how do you get to that point? How do you get to a point of being able to say that the Anglo-Saxons are the true people of Israel, of the true people of God, and that Jewish people are actually children of Satan? Well, simple math here, folks. Apparently, so Cain was born after the fall, so making him and his descendants evil. They are the children of Satan, while Anglo-Saxons are part of Adam's, is part of an earlier race of people that was populated before the fall. Essentially, and I'm sorry for all of you out there, because this is like a one little bit of theology that actually is a reasonable perspective to have. Basically, it's taking gap theory, that there's actually this big space of time in between, specifically Genesis like verse 1 and 2, that there's been like a whole like civilizations and other people groups coming and going prior to the fall. It's basically taking that, claiming that's where the true children of God are at, and those are white people, those are Anglo-Saxons, while people born of Cain after the fall are children of Satan, and those are the Jewish people. Now, there is one issue. Really, Brandon, you only have one issue with that? Look, there's a lot of issues there, but there's one issue there, and for once, folks, read a genealogy. Yeah, that's right. If you actually read a genealogy, you'll find out that, Abram, you know, Father Abraham, who had many sons had Father Abraham. Yeah, that guy isn't a descendant of Cain. He's a descendant of Seth. And I don't know what the response to that is. I don't know how this group then responds to the fact that they're just completely blowing off the normal words of the Bible there. But and even Abram's not even, he's a descendant of Noah, obviously. I'm a little bit skewed right now. I can't remember which one of the sons it is that Noah puts a curse on, but he's not even related to that one. Like, it's one of the other sons. Like there's, I got nothing here, folks. Gap theory aside, as I've already talked a little bit, how I have kind of a hard time with gap theory. I'm somewhere more on like the theistic evolution side of things with creation. Either way, that's not the point of Genesis 1 and 2, so we'll get off of it. But like, there's kind of this, like, that part aside, it's like, dude, just the Bible. It says son of this, son of that, all the way back to Seth, you know, the one we're supposed to be following, to Jesus. Yeah. Oh, by the way, Jesus, you know, he's a Jew. Actually, he's not. Ooh, you didn't see that coming now, did you? This is something that, of course, is like a big stumbling block, a big hoop to jump through. You know, the Jewishness of Jesus, especially if you're trying to rewrite the script on this thing. Now, in the late 1880s, when this was originally being formulated back over in England, that was like a whole book that this movement put out, was like, was Jesus a Jew or something along those lines. And obviously there in the early days when this comes across the pond to us, that also becomes an issue. And still, even to this day, there's a lot of nitpicking over the Jewishness of Jesus. Some people like to really pick apart the whole Nazareth living in Egypt for a while to try and like maybe make Jesus more into something that they want him to be, a little bit more of an agenda, or what, while trying to use it as providing nuance to the person of Jesus, kind of like trying to position him in a certain way. Thankfully, though, for every racist out there, the Nazis fixed this for you. Because in the 1930s, Nazi Bible quote scholars, I don't know what their theological expertise was, but obviously, there's a big issue with Jesus being a Jew if you're a Nazi. So the Bible quote scholars of the Nazis had to try and remedy this. And naturally, Jesus is an Aryan. He's the ultimate Aryan. That's how you fix it, folks. And this is actually something, you know, I know it's been a while here on the show since I've done a run of Bonhoeffer-related episodes. I've been wanting to get back into the Bonhoeffer thing for a while now. It's just been a little, it's been a different year for the show, and maybe by the end of the year, I'll be able to squeeze some Bonhoeffer in somewhere. Anyway, but this is, as I've been doing my research and into Bonhoeffer studies and the other surrounding theologians at the time, that is something that I keep thinking to myself of. At some point, I'm gonna have to branch over into somehow. I don't know how. Although some of these theologians did continue to get their, Nazi theologians that is, did continue to get their thoughts and perspectives printed and published into conservative evangelicalism. Like that, you trace back some theologies and some doctrines and you get back to, oh, that guy was a Nazi. Cool. Not cool. Just to be clear, this, please tell me you understand how much sarcasm I'm using at this point in the episode, right? You're picking up on the sarcasm here, right? I hope so. But at some point, as I continue to dive into the world of Dietrich Bonhoeffer and the theology that he is putting out, I'm going to have to somehow get into the theology that he is fighting against and what was actually trying to be biblically justified racism. So this is what the Christian Identity churches hold on to, is this idea that white people are the true, Anglo-Saxons are the true people of God, and that the Jewish people are the children of Satan, and that all those other things that kind of come up, like issues of interracial marriage, these dilute the family and things like that. And this is part of the reason why whenever I hear things about the nuclear family and, you know, all this kind of stuff, then I'm like, hey, let's just let families be families. Like, just let people be a little bit with their family dynamic and not critique the fact that it's a man and a woman and they only have one kid or whatever the situation may be. Like, let's not just like demonize people because their household looks a little bit different from your envisioned ideal household. No one's underbabied or whatever it was that Dr. Oz recently said. But obviously, Christian Identity just can't stop with Jewish people. There's also the issue of Black people as well. So where does all of the racist theology for that come from? Is that just the slave theology stuff? A little bit, but there's also, this is also, folks, just like a really simple explanation. You know, in Genesis 1, when it says that God created the beasts of the field, that's them. That's it. That's the whole explanation. You know, not what the entire rest of Christianity has figured of it being, you know, animals. Like, it's hard for me to even say that this is all eisegesis. Like, this is truly just, I don't like Black people, so they're animals. Like, that's all that this theology, especially this part of their doctrine. Like, this is it. It's, I don't like Black people, so what's this say? Beasts of the field? Yeah, that's them. Like, there's nothing. There is nothing there. And yet, they have created what is truly one of the most dangerous theological movements out there, right? This is a Christian nationalism, or a quotation Christian nationalism, definitely a nationalism that the whole movement is based off of identity, racial identity, versus literally any other option that Christians normally go with. This isn't about the grace of God. This isn't about the love of God. This isn't about redeeming humanity, reforming the church, being an evangelist. It's not any of the options. It's not any of them. Being a charismatic church, it's not any of them. It's, we are superior because we are white. That's it. That's the whole story. And we're going to just read whatever we want into the Bible in order to make it work and completely disregard other sections, like, I don't know, the part about Jesus being a Jew. And yes, these groups are small. They're niche. They're hundreds of miles away from me and wherever you live. But as this show and Extremely American have shown, is that this way of thinking is growing. The world is smaller. There are, information travels quicker. People are angry. People are directionless. And that's not a new thing either. People, you know, love them or hate them, I still think that Martin Luther's got a little bit of a point of, our hearts are an idol-making factory. And so we need something, whether it's God or otherwise, to provide us purpose and meaning in life. And I think that is part of the equation of what goes on here, that people need someone to follow. And, you know, you see it within other random places like the Menosphere, that as long as you are providing what sounds like to be the answer, and especially if it's coming from a perspective that may be cutting edge or on the outside, fringe, all of those kinds of things, edgy. Like, when it's coming from that kind of a mouthpiece, it suddenly lends itself to being like, oh, this might be the actual truth that I have been looking for, or potentially the justification for the things I have been thinking that I want to actually embrace. It's a difficult line for me to walk because I don't want to make it sound like some kind of like the, you know, there's an evil racist, Christian identity racist living next door. And, you know, because then that makes me no better than a lot of these people who are trying to make it seem like us versus the world is a lot of the thinking that goes on here, is some kind of we're the true ones, we're the real ones against the world, which is also a thought that happens sometimes, a lot of times, in evangelicalism in general, of us versus the world. And sometimes some of the most popular pastors are the coolest cutting edge ones. Christians are not like immune from these kinds of things either. I guess the point I'm trying to make here is read your genealogies. Okay, maybe that's not the main point, but who would have thought that would be like a sub point of this episode? But I think the main point I'm trying to make here is that there is a movement. It is documented. There is a movement going on of people with extremely racist beliefs and ideas who are claiming Jesus, and one who is just as white as Eric Metaxas was trying to make him sound like that one time. That was the best I could come up with to make that reference. I was trying to come up with some kind of joke there. There are people out there who do have these thoughts, and they are growing. And so for us as Christians, we need to understand that Jesus is Jewish, first off, that Jesus is Jewish, and that we need to be not racist. Like, that doesn't seem to be so cutting edge to say, but we need to, as this movement continues to grow, followers of Jesus need to take a clear stance that God shows no partiality towards people groups, that he loves all peoples, and that our identity, if we're going to keep using that word, is in Jesus, the Jewish man, and that the thoughts and beliefs that we are superior to others solely based off of our skin color is evil and also so, so, so insignificant compared to all the other ways that we could be following Jesus. We're following Jesus because we're white is such a small thing compared to following Jesus to know a beautiful, glorious God. I pulled it together there at the end, folks. Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you haven't yet already, please rate and review this episode wherever you get your podcasts. Hopefully you also got this one on that platform, but we'll see. Josh, I've been blacklisted. I don't know what I did. But thanks for listening to this episode. Make sure you check out the other great shows here on the Anazao Ministries Podcast Network, like the Whole Church Podcast, Theology on the Rocks, and my sister show, Kung Fu Pizza Party, where I deliver high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and serve some wisdom one slice at a time. And check out my YouTube channel, Studio 219, a place for faith and pop culture. But this is Brandon signing off, reminding you as always that theology is for everyone, so keep on studying.